this opportunity for them to come together and learn more about you and about the pivot you open your word up to us, that we might grow and know you better. In Jesus' name.
So, chapter 5 is a warning against adultery. I've already sectioned it out. So, is there someone that would be willing to read the first 3 verses? Go, Jarvis.
Chapter 5.
Mm-hmm.
My son, attend unto my wisdom and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil.
Okay. Thoughts?
I immediately think of Delilah and Samson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just with reminding him that to be discreet, because of how she was able to get him to tell of his, where his great strength lieth, was in his locks of hair, but she was after him for a while. He didn't just give it up immediately. He gave it up after she wore him down, that knowledge. So just the warning. And that kind of goes back to chapter 4 that we talked about last week, about the company you keep and those kinds of things too.
Well, the thing that gets Mrs. Samson too is by the time you get to Delilah, he had been a judge for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it also speaks to a hardness of heart and getting comfortable.
That wasn't his first day announced either.
No, it wasn't. That was the second one.
Well, I doubt it. I honestly think he was doing it for 20 years.
I'm sure he was. But that's the second one that was recorded.
Yeah, sure.
Well, seeking to, it just kind of highlighted from last week as well, remaining in wisdom, because he keeps drawing his son's attention to listen to him and asking, like pleading with him to remain in the wisdom that he gives. And we all know that Solomon, you know, fell short of this. And I think that might be why he keeps bringing this up. Mm-hmm. Like, I fell short here, so you make sure you remain in this, mm-hmm. you know. And then I was thinking in verse 3 where it's talking about lips. It's not just telling you, you know, what will happen. But I was thinking lips, that means that's what you should guard yourself against, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, you may have already said it, but I was trying to find a spot. But like, I read it in 2 different ways. First, the natural and the spiritual. Like, obviously, you've covered the natural, but the spiritual, I mean, you get spiritual Babylon, you got just the flesh, you get sin, and there's every path, pretty much every path outside of Jesus would be, you could refer to her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's good.
Mm. Right, because it does definitely say a strange woman, not somebody that you know.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Justice, do you need a Bible?
Yeah, a stack of them right over there. Mm-hmm. I can get you one.
Strange is also adulterous.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like familiar or unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I left my uncle's at home. That's the one I prefer to use, so.
Mm-hmm.
We've always got extras here.
The question I would ask is, why was the woman adulterous? Why?
Are we talking the
natural and spiritual?
Well, the spiritual, I take it to the whore of Babylon.
Yeah.
The seductress, the siren, basically.
Yeah. But natural is, could be a lot of reasons. Women that have been in marriages or relationships that, where there was unfaithfulness by a spouse, or she was emotionally neglected, where she craved intimacy, not so much the physical part, but she needed the emotional, and it forced her, or maybe she just frankly needed the money, or the influence.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't specify whether she's a prostitute or not.
Yeah.
Are y'all ready?
And if you, and on the spiritual end of it, you think of Mystery Babylon, you think of the Jezebel. I always think of the fact that there's a grab for power so many times. And I think anybody that is familiar with what's going on in the news, especially what's going on in Britain and whatnot, it has destroyed kingdoms. This, the consequences that David paid were incredible. But anyway, and also too, on a spiritual realm, I think at times when we've prayed to the Lord and we wanted a prayer, we prayed diligently and whatnot, and God never seemed to answer us. And it's so easy in those times when you feel God hasn't answered you to switch to another God. People turn to their rabbit's foot. You may think it's lucky, but it wasn't lucky for the rabbit, you know. Or they will turn to another God, or they will turn to a grove where there's instant gratification, like in the garden.
And because you want a wife so bad, and it's easy to just go over there and have.
Yeah,
you got to stay away from it.
Yeah. Let's read verses 4 through 7. Anyone interested in reading?
He taught me and he said to me, "Let your heart lay hold of my words. Keep my commands so that you will live. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget and do not turn aside from the words I speak. Do not forsake."
I'm in Proverbs 5.
Oh, well, how'd I go back? I was in 5.
Yeah, 4 through 7.
Let's try that again.
I like that version.
If at first we don't succeed.
But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as two-edged sword. Mm. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. Blessed she should make level the path leading to life. Her paths are unstable, but she does not know it. So now, children, listen to me. Do not turn aside from the words I speak. Hmm. You said there's 7, right?
Yep. Thoughts?
Trust me.
I think it's important that, you know, she's unaware. Like, she's, I think oftentimes, you know, you ask about the natural. I think sometimes it's a survival skill. You don't even know that circumstances in your life prepare you, or they put you on a path towards, you know, manipulative behavior and behavior that is, like, you're just, I don't know, it's like you have this veil up. You don't even know, not you, but, you know, people, I think that there's, like, ignorance associated with this kind of deceit. I don't see it as being something that she is. You know, the forbidden woman isn't necessarily trying to entrap somebody. I think, so she didn't even consider the path of her life. She didn't know that her ways were, her eyes are totally not fixed on life or the Lord. They're totally fixed on what she wants to do and how she's going to do it and how she's going to get what she sees. And, you know, everybody else that gets in her way just
pushes
them aside. Well, at the end of chapter 4, he said, keep your path straight, turn not to the left or the right hand, keep your feet from evil. And this is telling you, this is the other path.
Yes.
And what happens to you if you don't go straight?
Yeah, that's the consequences of not listening.
Yeah, well, this, you know, for every action, there's a reaction, or opposite reaction. And if you keep your eyes straight ahead and discern with your knowledge what is good and what is evil, you'll see that this is evil. But if you don't, He's saying, if you stray, this is what's going to happen. This is the bad path.
It says in Timothy, silly women, never learning, never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Women late in the sin. And I agree with what I see how Natalie sees that, and I agree that many of these women are put in positions, especially in third world countries, in positions that they're desperate.
Well, if someone's put in a position not of their own accord, there's always redemption.
Always.
But if they do it willingly and of their own accord, which is, I think, what he's talking about here, a strange woman is not a right woman or a Christian or a godly. Strange woman is of the world and doesn't embrace God.
And you're unequally yoked.
Well, I don't think this is talking about a person. I think that we are attributing, you know, human characteristics to the woman, and I think that we need to keep this on a spiritual level, because, you know, there isn't necessarily a motive in the ways of the world. The world wants to trip up everybody that takes its eyes off of Jesus. That's why the woman doesn't consider the path. They, you know, there is total instability in the things of the world. And again, like you said, going back to the previous chapter, keeping your eyes straight ahead, keeping your eyes fixed on the Lord, because otherwise, you know, that's when you are susceptible to the things of the world and the forbidden fruit or the forbidden woman or Babylon.
And we shouldn't be so myopic as to assume that this is just women. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of men that are just as much of a wolf as women.
Yeah. Even the men change their ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Aaron, it's funny you should mention that, because we were talking about that a few Proverbs back, because he keeps addressing his son. Mm-hmm. But we mentioned that. We're like, you know, he's not really just talking to his sons. He's talking to...
Well, he might be, but we should all learn something from it.
But it's not. But it is. It's both. It's it's men and women, and you know. So that's a good point to always highlight for sure.
Well, like if you look at 7, hear me now, therefore, O you children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Mm-hmm. So it's children. It's not necessarily his one son or just his sons. He's talking to all his children.
I don't want to sound contradictory, but verse 19 makes it pretty obvious to me that he is talking about women.
What is a woman?
He's talking about a wife.
I think that's
about a wife.
The fact is, to me, a woman is someone whose breasts would satisfy me. A man's wouldn't.
I mean, if you're teaching your son about staying pure, you would emphasize those things that might drag him, which is going to be different from men to women. So,
yeah.
I'm saying he wrote what he wrote, but that can be applied more broadly. Just as we don't just read the Psalms from David's perspective, because it wasn't just always from David.
Right.
I feel like in verse 7, it's almost like he's remembering kind of when his dad went through this. So Solomon's thinking like about David and him walking through this with the woman and committing adultery with her. And because he's bringing it up again as like a remembrance.
Does anybody have any idea when he wrote Proverbs about how old he was or how long he was in his reign? Do you know, Aaron?
No idea.
How about you, Justin? You can whip through your...
I can Google it.
Yeah. The reason is he had 1,000 women at the time.
Yeah. I think in my study Bible, in the car, it says he wrote it early in his reign. The first part of Proverbs.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's supposed to have a lot of concubines, too.
Yeah, 300. 300.
I would think that it was early on, because I think he probably wrote it early on, and then as he got older, he wrote Ecclesiastes, but I still think it was all before he had taken on, or at least Proverbs, before he had taken on all the sin that he took on. And Ecclesiastes certainly spends time talking about wealth, but Proverbs spends much less time talking about it than Ecclesiastes, percentage-wise.
So what's your thought? Are you thinking that maybe...
I think he wrote Song of Solomon first, about his first wife. Then he did Proverbs sometime later. Mm-hmm. And then Ecclesiastes as he got older, but before his heart was completely hardened. Because we see by the time his heart got hardened, he was willing to completely go against every prophecy that he received and try to murder those that God had raised up. There's no repentance. It was solely about trying to save his physical kingdom. Yeah. I don't know what Google says.
It aligns with that. It says that he wrote Song of Solomon in his youth, Ecclesiastes in his elder, like his last years, and Proverbs. According to rabbinic tradition, Solomon wrote Song of Songs in his youth, Proverbs in middle age, and Ecclesiastes in old age, with about a 40-year reign, and his son Rehoboam born before he became king. This places Proverbs roughly in his 40s, around the 12th to 22nd year of his reign.
That makes sense.
Well, so far, from what I'm getting, God's telling me it's not my way, it's his way.
That's
what I'm getting out of this so far, what's been going on. It's not our way, it's his way.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it says in verse 7 that the words of my mouth, it seems like the only stabilizing thing is the word of God. The only stabilizing thing. And if we're left to our own ways, wow.
We can end up not where we want to be.
You can end up in a dark place.
And sometimes you have to do things. You say, I really want to do this, but the Word of God says no, and the battle begins. And it seems like the devil, Satan, tries to get you. He knows exactly where to reach you at your age.
What? Can we read 8 and 9? Because that's what I was going to say about that.
Well, can we just go ahead and read 8 through 11?
Oh, yeah, you're the leader.
Go, Miss.
You want me to do it? It's in the ESV, or CSV. Keep your way far from her. Don't go near the door of her house. Otherwise, you will give up your vitality to others and your years to someone cruel. Strangers will drain your resources, and your hard-earned pay will end up in a foreigner's house. At the end of your life, you will lament when your physical body has been consumed. That's why I think that you can apply this to more than just the idea of women, because I see, you know, people give up their life to drugs. I see people give up their life to, you know, different addictions. It's, you know, and it's the same outcome. You're giving up your vitality. The years are cruel to you. Your hard-earned pay ends up in a foreigner's house. You are lamenting when your physical life body has been consumed. You know, and I tell, you know, my kids this, don't look for a mate among people that are not equally yoked with you. Like, don't even tempt yourself. Like, they're not in the running for your heart. Like, don't even look twice at them, because, you know, unless God were to do something and bring them to you in some way, but, I mean, don't fixate on them, don't. You know, all of those things, because that is just, that's putting temptation. That's like sitting, like, you know, you have an addiction to chocolate, and you sit in front of a chocolate cookie. You know, it's just going to draw you in. So no, don't even keep
moving
far away.
Moving to Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Right. Huh?
Moving to Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it just goes to addiction, but any, like, perpetual sin or stronghold. I mean, all of us have known an old man that is just angry and bitter all the time. And sure, when they were a youth, they may have been angry and bitter about one thing, but after a while, it just spills over to everything else. And, you know, that goes for all kinds of things, where if you're not growing with God anymore, it can just completely take over your life.
You know how many times I've heard this over the years of ministry, people come to me and says, well, if I want to marry this guy, or this guy says, I want to marry this girl, and in the marriage, I'm going to get him saved. that is tough. He said, no. No. And they said, don't you want that person saved? I've heard it.
Marriage is hard enough without that on top of everything else.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking, you know, I just have different little things underlined. In verse 8, you know, saying keep your way far from her, I was thinking, you know, that's kind of what you were saying. Mm-hmm. Keep your distance. As soon as you notice these attributes that we've already described, kind of keep your distance. But, you know, you're going to know, like, if they're equally yoked with you. I was looking at strength as, like, the extra stress. I mean, like, if you think of it in the format of, like, maybe, like, a divorce, like, well, now you've got two families. It's taken more of your strength, more of your energy.
Yes.
You're now, like, trying to give alimony and child support for this one at the same time of, like, taking care of your current family. You know, I mean, I know this is happening more and more, but it just some of the things that popped in my head, and the labor is the same thing. It's mm-hmm. suddenly your money's getting split.
Mm-hmm.
Like your wealth. So it takes a toll on your system. It takes a toll on your finances. And it affects your honor.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my thoughts.
It affects your status with God.
I don't know. I think he does forgive everyone. I don't think that it does that. But I think that, you know, it does have a natural consequence, whether we're forgiven or not. There's natural consequences that happen.
This is a quick story.
Go ahead.
Quick. Sharon and I took a cruise about 20 years ago. And, you know, they have and for you that have been on a cruise, you have a common dining table at that time. And Sharon and I sat down at this table, and other people filed in, and we just said, hello, how are you? And ready for our meal. And people started talking, and they said, well, what do you do? And one of the gentlemen sitting at the table was the dean of Harvard Business School. And he had his wife there. And next to him was the president and CEO of Royal Tires Corporation. He was an executive. He was the top gun. And they asked me what I was doing, and I couldn't wait for a mask. And so I was talking about Jesus and Christianity. And the president, or the CEO of Royal Tires, said, I believe that in Jesus and his death, burial, and resurrection. And his wife of years sat across the table in front of everybody. I didn't know you were a Christian. Sharon got up and walked away from the table. But I stayed. I couldn't. I was just, it never dawned on me. I never knew you were a Christian. So those that think that they're going to change their spouse or whatnot, even though they're not believers, I've seen it in action with high mucky muck people. Story ended.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Go, Justin. It's on your tip of your tongue. I can see it.
I was going to say, that sounds more like a Matthew 7 thing, like, depart from me because I never knew you. Mm-hmm. How you can be married to somebody and they not know that you're a Christian if you're a Christian?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Christianity is not a belief, it's an action.
Yep.
That's what I was going to say. He probably wasn't living it if she didn't recognize it being a daily witness of his life.
Yeah.
An action, an attitude.
But you know, they had to come to Jesus, him and his wife had to come to Jesus meeting that night.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
When I read this about losing everything, another quick story. When I worked at Dodge, there was a man out there, 72 years old, throwing grain bags. Like, how are you still doing this? He says, I retired at 65, got married at 66, and had to go back to work at 67. He says, he took my entire retirement, took everything that I had with the union. He says, so I'm out here till the day I die. Took everything.
I want to read I'm sorry, Justin, were you about to say something?
You.
Okay. Do you want to read verses 12 through 14?
You will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or turn my ear to my instructors, and I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people.
Read 14 again from your version.
And I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people.
Maybe accountability.
Exposed.
Mm-hmm. Not just kind of like one of those little too late moments, maybe.
Or God's grace that he was exposed.
Mine reads, I almost came to complete ruin in the midst of the whole congregation. So not that I did, but I almost did.
Yeah, like the brink.
It sounds like a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody loves the fun drunk until the one day you realize that it's not fun anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know? According to the NLT, or the New Living Translation, I have come into the brink of utter ruin mm-hmm. from the decision I made.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we keep learning about discipline and how, you know, it's wise to accept discipline and have a good attitude about it, and that you're loved because if you're receiving discipline and that you are getting discipline, you should know that you're loved, because he's not going to discipline someone he's not loved. He doesn't love. So when I see verse 12, it's like how I hated discipline, you know, and my heart despised reproof. It's almost like he's like frustrated, aggravating with himself. There's like a regret there.
Yeah, it is regret. Mm-hmm.
There's a regret there.
Because it's not totally turned to God.
Well, he's turning now.
I don't think anybody likes reproof or correction or those things. But I have found in sports, and I found when I was studying other disciplines, that the instructor was harder on certain people that I thought were really great at their position or in the dojo or whatnot. Why are they so hard on that guy? And he says, I'm trying to build a champion. And when the coach or the teacher seems to be more difficult on certain students, sometimes you have to ask yourself why. They want them to soar to heights. Sometimes. There's other times too.
Any other thoughts?
Just that hated is a past tense. Mm-hmm. You know. And I think just coming back to what you said, sometimes exposure is that's grace of God. Mm-hmm. You know, it's we don't live for this world, which is hard to remember because this world puts a lot of pressure on us, but sometimes he needs to adjust our focus a little. And so, on the verge, meaning he hasn't come to complete ruin, but this is almost like that stopgap, you know. And then this realization starts in verse 15, mm-hmm. you know, which is what we're about to get into.
Yeah. Well, I think, like you're saying, like, the, you know, There's this funny line with justice and mercy. You know, we think to like immediately take care of something. Certain things need to be taken care of pretty quickly. To take care of something immediately, it seems not merciful. But the thing is that if that thing were to continue, the consequence level, it's actually more merciful to just
nip it in the bud.
That is mercy, even though it doesn't seem like it. Because we think of mercy as like, give him another chance. Sometimes that's not merciful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big misunderstanding with mercy. Mm-hmm. Anyways, who would like to read verses 15 through 19?
Justin,
then. I will.
Go ahead.
Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of waters in the streets. let them be only thine own and not for the strangers with thee. Do I need to go further?
Is yeah, keep going.
Good, till 19.
Let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth, what you already have. Let her be as a loving hind and pleasant road. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. So be thankful for what you got.
Mm-hmm. Up in D.C., there was a guy that always just told me, we'd hang out for lunch, and it's his way of saying goodbye. He's like, have a good night, enjoy the wife of your youth. Oh, he was a weird...
Did I say that?
I mean, familiarity breeds content, but it's like Justin's always said, you got to date your wife. You got to appreciate what you have, because we can get bound up in those little things instead of getting focused on what we do have. I heard somebody say something that's interesting, that anytime they start to feel discontented, they just pretend like they have nothing at all. All the stuff they have is gone. And then just slowly start to appreciate all the things that they do have. Which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of 15 and 16 with streams?
So go back to Song of Solomon, chapter 4.
Yep.
And then go to 12 to 14. It says, you're a garden locked up, my sister, my bride. You are a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain.
So the water is your
sexuality.
It's your wife.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's, and then keep your sexuality to yourself. Don't spread it out with everybody around you. Be chaste.
Yeah, 15 is talking about appreciating his wife. 16 is talking about him not spreading his sexuality around.
His desires.
His desires, yeah.
Self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And for the wives, as Pastor Tommy Nelson said, I dare you to look at your husband and say, awake, north wind, and blow thou south, and come into thy garden, which is also Song of Solomon. Like, come here, big guy.
Well, there's a building, you know, it's not just, you know, we think of like, you know, sex, but there's intimacy growing in that because you're building time with that person and you're getting to know them. And so there's like a whole intimacy building up in this. And it's trying to, I feel like it's kind of defining that. Mm-hmm. And it makes it build to a greater
mm-hmm.
level. Yeah, rejoice with her. It's a choice. So I think of this as like, you know, it's kind of like when we're reading Corinthians 13 about love, you know, we hear a lot of people say, I fell out of love with somebody. You know, that's just a feeling when it's really just a choice. It's a verb. It's a choice that we're making. And I think here we're showing, it's displaying how there's this choice. Stay in this renewal of gratitude about your wife or vice versa, your husband. Focus on the things that make you one with them. And
mm-hmm.
you know, for some of us that have been married a long time, but maybe Jarvis could attest to this. Nobody else is older than us guys. But I discover new things, things I never knew after 52 years of marriage. But I found out something. I have to search it out.
You?
I have to query. And I have to use it in good timing. Oh, you know.
Study to be approved.
Yeah, it takes, for long-term marriages, you've got to always keep going for the gold. Because your spouse is gold that needs to be discovered. You know, for a man, he comes to marriage through biology, a woman comes through her heart and emotions. And the two meet, and there's value in both. But a wise man will try to search out the gems, and I still see gems in my marriage that I've discovered.
And the jewelry box?
Jewelry box. Tell me about it. I wish I had known about that.
No, I think that.
She could have just changed her mind.
Say, oh, I didn't know you bought those.
You know she's watching.
Oh, was that who said something while ago?
Yeah. I YouTube was showing it from Sunday night. I watched well, and so when I opened YouTube to see if your setup was working, that's why you heard it, because it was already set up.
That's why when I get it going, I leave the room so I can listen on my phone for a minute, make sure it's working.
I was just gonna say, it just one thing that really strikes me is, you know, just how casually we throw around the word love.
Yeah.
You know, if love really is an action, it doesn't matter if I tell my kid I love him. If I'm biting his head off and allowing, you know, my frustrations to overcome my extension of love to him, or if I'm disrespectful, or if I tell you I love you and I don't do anything to demonstrate. I think in our world, in our society, maybe it's more America than anywhere else. It's just we love to tell everybody how much we love them, but we're not loving people. We are more consumed with how we feel and our emotions and how they make me feel, or what, you know, this situation makes me feel, or how the church made me feel, or whatever, that we really do not walk in love very well. And I think that those are probably those more diamond rare moments where we are loving than they are as frequently as we think they are. Like, we tell ourselves we're loving, but if we really think about it,
there's water running.
Sawyer's washing his eyes.
Oh, okay. But if we really think about it, I think that the moments where we really demonstrate God's love, they're maybe just for me, they're further, fewer and far between. I mean, I think it's something that we all need to ask, you know, the Lord just to help us with.
I think it's wisdom to try to think about the way we use our language. I mean, we do that with Austin too. Austin had one very specific definition, and we use it until it means nothing at all.
Oh, awesome?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah. What does it mean? I don't know that.
Full of awe.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Like, God is awesome.
God is awesome.
My cheeseburger is not awesome.
I know.
You didn't taste my cheeseburger the other night. Yeah.
Depends on how you make it. But yeah, I get, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
It is something that we have to be cognizant of, and that is an aside, because our language often betrays not just the way we use the language, but it also shapes our attitudes and the way we think about things.
Yeah.
And it's easy to fall into hyperbole, but when we do that a lot, it hardens your heart.
I learned something that kind of shocked me. I was glancing and I saw this commercial for tickets for Taylor Swift, I believe, and they showed a picture of her on stage, and she says, "I love you." And the ticket price for special seats were $400 and above. Now, I'd love, you know, somebody gives you $400.
I heard that.
Yeah. It says, "Where your treasure is, there's where your heart is." And where do you invest yourself? Do you invest yourself in the Word of God? Do you invest yourself in the house of the Lord? Do you invest yourself in your wife, your kids? You know, and in your language. And I agree with you, Aaron, your language. It's a shame that we have to use love so generically, even though some of us that have had Greek backgrounds understand there's other words for love. But You know, when you say you love someone, if you, there's got to be an intent. There's got to be meaning there.
You have to inquire, what did she want out of the deal?
Well, and if you're not fulfilled by the wife of your youth, you're definitely not going to be fulfilled by 1,000 of them. That's going to be really hard to build up intimacy. Anyways, verse 23.
Anyone?
I'll read it.
Go ahead. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his doings. His own iniquities shall take the wicked itself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray.
So he's looking at you, watching you, if you're living for him or if you're doing your own thing.
Well,
and then here it shows that you will even lose him in the end.
Let's say you like went out of town and you committed adultery out of town, but it was like out of town, nothing, you know.
It stays in there, happens in Vegas.
Yeah, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. It's still going to entrap you. Mm-hmm. Because the Lord sees.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not just the Lord either. If you've got a secret sin, Satan's going to bring it up to you as many times as he can. Mm-hmm.
I'm confused how 20 has to do with 21 through 23. I'm not drawing the connection.
It's turning the why, it's, and then it's leading into all the whys.
Yeah, it's bringing back the last two.
Sleeping on his wife, he kills you.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, right? It wrecks your own marriage, even if you don't tell your wife, right? And you keep it, somehow you keep it hidden all the rest of your days. And I've heard of deathbed confessions before. That marriage is not going to mean as much to you anymore.
I see led astray as like becomes your new normal.
It's a hardness of heart. Hmm. Because this thing used to be a blessed and sacred thing. You've made an oath. You've compromised that oath. Now, that's not as sacred to you as it was.
Then you make an excuse why you're doing it.
It's very similar to the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit, to where he calls you and you resist, and you resist, and you resist, and you resist. And he's not going to just keep forcing himself on you, because you've come accustomed and hardened to that voice. We hear the same thing with conscience often when people are giving advice to not grow hardened to your own conscience, but listen to it.
Mm-hmm. And you won't know when you're cut off from him neither. Mm-hmm.
What do y'all think when you see cords?
The cords of his sin?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think of webs, like spider webs. I walked into a spider web today, and it just kept, you know, brushing my face. It just felt like there was stuff, you know, it stuck to you. That's what I think of. It's just the stickiness of, like, webs. Cords.
Go ahead.
Guitar cords.
Huh. Guitar cords.
Any other thoughts?
The Lord comes to break off shackles. So our sin are really cords or chains in the long ways.
Well, if you look at Samson, right, they tried to restrain him with cords first, and chains came later. Yes. So cords restrain a weak person. They use the chains if you're strong, but the cords can restrain the weak. And at this point, he has very little resistance, so he can be bound very easily.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that he pushed down the pillars, but I still believe he was chained, and they just led him to there. Mm-hmm. So his power came outside instead of from within. Just an analogy.
It's another aside. I often, because it refers to the fact that his hair began to grow, which was not ever the source of his strength, but it was to him. And I think that's why it notes it, because he couldn't just, at that point, trust in God. Even though he prayed, the hair having to grow is what helped build his confidence.
Well, the vow of a Nazarite is a powerful vow.
Sure.
And I remember when Dr. Neal was alive, did he let his hair grow? Remember that?
Yeah, just like Miss Charlotte's hair.
And I never said anything to him because I didn't want to embarrass him or anything. I thought, well, maybe it had to do with his boat business. And then he came in with a haircut and I says, I thought you took the vow of a Nazarite. Oh no, Delilah got to me, and his wife, you know, was sitting there with a smile on her face.
Well, are y'all ready to close? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in closing, you know, this is kind of an intense chapter, and so I wanted to read Hebrews 4:14-16. Says, since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important because he's the only reason we can get forgiveness for any of this. Mm-hmm. And he's also the one that he was not tempted. And he was tempted in this, but he never fell into it.